From the UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. What an incredible moment out here. You know, this is the first time I've been in Roswell, New Mexico, and of course, this being the 60th anniversary of this incredible crash, we're going to be talking with a number of guests here tonight. Let me set the stage for you just for a moment. First of all, there are thousands of people who have come down to Roswell, New Mexico from all over the place. I've met people from Louisiana, Alabama, Roswell, New Mexico. They're all over the place, and they're having a great time. They're watching concerts and everything else. But more importantly, they are diehard listeners of Coast to Coast AM, and they want to find out the truth, as so many of us always do. And I want to thank, first of all, the so many people here in Roswell who have been very gracious to producer Tom and myself, who have just opened up their doors. Well, sort of. They didn't let us in their house. We wanted to, but they didn't do that. And they've been just delightful here, and it's a great part of the country. And the Roswell Police Department has been absolutely superb. Producer Tom only had two speeding tickets in Roswell today, which normally he gets six or seven. So that is doing well, and one of them we're trying to get fixed. I don't know if we're going to be able to pull that off. But they have been just incredible, watching us, following us. Actually, they could be the men in black. I'm not sure. But they're here. Anyways, let me tell you some of the news of the day, and then we are going to get right into our first guest. We're going to have a series of guests coming in all night long here. First of all, a poll has just been released by the American Research Group. This is an incredible story. It says nearly half of the United States public wants President George W. Bush to face impeachment, and even more favor the fate for Vice President Dick Cheney, according to this poll. Now, the survey by this American Research Group found that 45% support the U.S. House of Representatives beginning impeachment proceedings against the president. This is incredible, with 46% opposed. And over on the vice president's side, 54% in favor when it comes to impeaching him. The study by the private New Hampshire group canvassed 1,100 Americans by telephone. They say there's a margin of error of plus or minus 3%. In Orange Beach, Alabama, listen to this story. As a matter of fact, I told one of the Roswell police officers this. He couldn't believe it. Police who chased a car for miles along a highway at speeds up to 100 miles an hour said the driver was drunk. But there was more. When they looked inside of the vehicle that had flipped over, guns drawn, they found an 11-year-old girl at the wheel. She was the one who was drunk. Well, they arrested her, and she said in her slobbering way that she needed to pick up her sister at a concert. 11 years old. And men are just as chatty as women, according to scientists. Researchers bugging 400 students to log their chats, and they found little difference in word count between the sexes. The University of Alabama study published in Science conflicts with previous U.S. research suggesting that women talk almost three times as much as men. Ice-covered Greenland really was green a half a million or so years ago, covered with forests and a climate much like that of Sweden and eastern Canada. An international team of researchers recovered ancient DNA from the bottom of an ice core that indicates the presence of pine, yew, and alder trees, as well as insects. They said about 1,000 years ago, Greenland was discovered by the Vikings and that they had colonies there, but they had to leave because the temperatures then had cooled. NASA this weekend is set to launch a spacecraft that will journey to the asteroid belt that lies between Mars and Jupiter, a mission that involves a rendezvous with two of the solar system's largest asteroids. They'll hook up with them in a few years, with also one of them in 2015. Richard C. Hoagland will be joining me in a few moments, as he's going to co-host the program with me. He'll get a kick out of this story. NASA has agreed to pay $19 million for a Russian-built toilet system for the International Space Station. Now, the figure, they say, may sound astronomical for a toilet in space, but NASA officials say that it was cheaper than building their own. Wouldn't you like that contract? I'll be back in a moment with special guests, Stanton Friedman, Jesse Marcel Jr. on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, live from the UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico. Okay, welcome back to the UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico. I'm George Norrie, live here with a number of guests. 60th anniversary here. You know these two. Of course, they were on the program several weeks ago, but we get to see them in the flesh. Stanton Friedman received his BS and MS degrees in physics from the University of Chicago in 1955 and 1956, where Carl Sagan was once a classmate. Stanton, I refer to him, too, as the father of modern-day ufology, an expert in Roswell. And, Stan, I've got to tell you, when I first met you in 1971, you actually look younger now than you did 36 years ago, for crying out
loud. I'll pay you later, George.
You really do. Are you sure you're from this world?
No, I live in Canada.
And, of course, this man's name has been going all around the country lately. He's the author of the book, The Roswell Legacy, and he's the son of the late Colonel Jesse Marcel. Jesse Marcel Jr. joined the U.S. Navy in 1962 and was assigned to the USS Renville, and shortly thereafter participated in the Cuban Missile Crisis, attached to combat units as a member of the ship's company. Now, he's a medical doctor, 68 years old, Jesse, if I remember, right around there.
71.
71, okay. Back from Iraq, where you just served some duty.
13 months worth.
Absolutely incredible. Thank you for serving
us,
by the way. And Jesse's father was part of the group that picked up the crash debris at Roswell. Stanton, Jesse, they're here with us as we talk about what's going on with this festival. It seems lately, Stan, that the Roswell case is getting a lot of publicity now. A lot of things from you, Jesse, Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, the affidavit of Lieutenant Walter Hout that has now come out.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're getting close to finding out what happened.
We certainly seem to be getting closer, and there's been a more open attitude by the media. I've had loads of questions about Tom and Don's book, for example. And I was the one who found Walter Hout all these many years, late 70s. And obviously people are paying attention to what's going on, and I guess their book is selling like hotcakes. So is Jesse's new book, The Roswell Legacy, and my new book, Captured. I mean, there seems to be a breakthrough somehow, and the media has gotten off the anti-UFO kick, and they've recognized, I suppose because of that Chicago Tribune story on January 1st, mm-hmm. that the public is really interested in this subject. Now, you can go outside during the day here and see how many people are here who drove 200 miles to get here or 2,000 miles. But, Roswell has come back into prominence. And I don't know, I mean, two new books in a few-week period, Don and Tom's and Jesse's. And people at the museum, where I've been all day, are constantly asking questions. I spoke to, they need a bigger museum because the room I was scheduled in was packed with people. It was too darn warm.
Well, you do.
People are interested. I've been very, I was here for the 50th anniversary, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's good to see that people are coming back here. I had somebody tell me just a few days ago, Roswell's passe, nobody cares about that. Well, you can tell from being here that they do care.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're not on the way to anywhere. If they're here, they want to be here. They're enjoying themselves.
Jesse, yesterday on Coast to Coast, I read the Walter Hout's affidavit.
Right.
And in it, he mentioned your father. And he mentioned how your father talked about the crash debris.
Right.
But what I found very, very fascinating was he mentioned that after your father left the room where some of the debris was brought in, he came back and said that General Ramey had exchanged it for some balloon material, and that your dad was very, very upset about it.
Well, he was. That photograph of him in General Ramey's office holding up a very obvious radar target, and look on his face, you got to be kidding me. He was totally flabbergasted by that, but he was told that this is where the cover-up was going to begin, and it stayed that way, and he became part of the cover-up by following orders. He was a good soldier.
I saw you on Fox News just recently, and you did a great job. I'm not sure they took you seriously. Did you get that feeling?
There's a little bit of feeling like that, yes.
It is so important, Stanton Friedman, that the mainstream media begin to look at this subject as they do just about everything else they try to unravel on this planet.
Yeah, it's time for the investigative journalists to do their job. They've been missing from the scene for most of the last 60 years. And now, we're losing witnesses, after all, it's been 60 years. And I'm hoping that the response to this festival will move us in that direction, that it'll be taken more seriously. There's a lot of media people here. I don't know if there's as many as there were 10 years ago, where there were over 300 journalists here. And I was doing interviews all the time.
Is that more than you've seen in past situations here?
Here so far, I can't say it's more. No, not yet. But I haven't been. Remember, I've been sort of down at the museum.
Yeah, that's
they're,
true.
They're two separate. That's one of the big differences this time. Then it was all one coordinated program.
Yeah,
so people sort of flowed back and forth. Now there are two. And so I did things then at both places. And this year it's only at the museum. So I'm not in a good position to judge what else is going on because I'm not psychic. I'm a dumb old physicist, not a bright psychic.
You know? You've been kicking around in the field of ufology for how long?
I read the first book in 49 years. I've been lecturing for 40 years.
What is it that got you interested in it? What happened?
I read a book. What else? I was a young nuclear physicist. And working for General Electric on nuclear airplanes, everybody does that. This is 1958. And I was ordering books. I needed one more book from a discount place. There was one, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects by Captain Edward Ruppelt, Project Blue Book head in the early 50s. And I found out tonight, incidentally, we had a little gathering of a new group of seven researchers, and three of us got started by reading Ruppelt's book. It was a kind of important book. Anyway, it didn't convince me, but it intrigued me. And I moved to California, read 15 more books, some of which were utter junk. And if I'd read one of them first, I'd have never read another book.
Yeah.
See, I respected the Air Force because they were a co-sponsor on the nuclear airplane program. Some of my attitudes about the Air Force have changed a bit the last few years as they do all their debunking. But what really turned me on was finding Project Blue Book Special Report 14 at the University of California, Berkeley Library. A study of 3,201 cases, and it hadn't been mentioned in any of the 15 books that I had read. And I discovered, I'm a data hound, and there were 240 charts, tables, graphs, maps, data heaven. And then there was a statement from the Secretary of the Air Force lying through his teeth. And that, look, I had a security clearance. I was accustomed to you be a little careful what you say. Maybe you don't reveal everything. But when you flat out lie, he said the on the basis of this report, we believe that no objects such as those popularly described as flying saucers have overflown the United States. Even the unknown 3% could have been identified as conventional phenomena or illusions if more complete observational data had been available. Similar statements have been repeated many times. The only problem with that statement is it's totally false. The unknowns were 21.5%, not 3%. They were completely separate from the 9.5% that had insufficient data. They did a quality evaluation. The better the quality, the more likely to be unknown. Exactly what you'd expect if they were really different. But they went a step farther. They did a cross comparison, apparent size, color, shape, speed, six different characteristics, unknowns versus knowns. They found the probability the unknowns were just misknowns was less than 1%. So that really shook me up, and it got me rolling. Read a lot more books, got started on a radio program, George, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I had called the program. They weren't interested in having me on. Then I get a call one night, 6:30 for a 7 o'clock talk show on KDKA, big station.
Yeah.
Could I please go on? Somebody had canceled, and they must have called six other
they
people.
They were desperate. Before. They needed you.
You're right. And I didn't know how to handle a host who didn't know what he was talking about. I've learned since. But that led to my first lecture in somebody's living room. Then I did the chicken and peas circuit. What the real breakthrough for me was speaking to professional groups, engineering societies all over the place.
Yes.
And it was their enthusiastic response that when the bottom fell out of the advanced nuclear and space systems business, as it did in 1970, that led me to go full-time on UFOs.
I believe that's where I met you in Detroit, because I think you were speaking to the Detroit Engineers Group back in 1971.
Well,
I'm pretty sure
I spoke to a whole bunch of groups in Detroit.
Sure.
But I stress that because some people think it's only the kooks and weirdos and wackos who are interested in UFOs. Nothing could be further from the truth.
You were one of those who basically found, years later, 1978-ish, Jesse Marcel's father.
Well, I was the one. I was referred to him by a television station manager who was embarrassed because his reporter who was supposed to interview me wasn't there on time, and he knew I had other things to do.
Uh-huh.
I was speaking at LSU. And he's looking at his watch. He's giving me coffee. And out of the blue, he says, you know, the guy you ought to talk to is Jesse Marcel, and brilliant investigator that I am. I said, who's he? Oh, well, he handled wreckage of one of these saucers you were interested in when he was in the military. Well, I picked my teeth up off the floor. What do you know about him? Lives over in Houma. I didn't know where Houma
was. And how old was Junior at the time?
In 78?
Yeah.
Oh, I was about 32 years old.
Okay, so you were up there in age. Yeah. But when you were a little boy, Jesse, your father brought home some debris, and you saw something with some inscriptions on it.
Well, yes, he brought some debris in from the field. It was so unusual, he wanted my mother and myself to examine it because he realized that this was extraordinary, very unique material. And so he brought it into the house so we could examine it. And I said, first of all, look for any electronic components in this floor full of material that you spread out there, and none like that. But then there was some unusual debris, like the I-beams, or what I call I-beams,
right.
Metal beams with writing or symbols written along the inner surface of it.
They look Egyptian?
Well, I thought at first it was Egyptian hieroglyphics, but no, there was no animals or birds or snakes or whatever. But they're more like geometric symbols of various configurations, all imprinted along the inside surface of this I-beam.
Are you convinced now, Jesse, that with the material your father saw, with the things that you now know Walter Haut has basically said in his affidavit, that what happened in 1947 was out of this earth?
Yeah. I've known that for many, many years.
Yeah.
You know,
it was always there.
From day one, from the get-go, I realized that there was something extraordinary about this, that this was not one of our creation.
How do you feel knowing that we were visited by beings from another planet?
Well, it certainly made me interested in astronomy and cosmology because I realized we're not the only ones here, that there's enormous possibilities of life elsewhere, as you know. You know, in our galaxy, there's 400 billion stars, and they never had found stars or planetary systems around other stars, but the Hubble telescope started picking planetary systems up. So about half the stars have planetary systems, so there's a lot of blue Earth-like planets out there.
Roswell Legacy, it's a great read. And Stanton, a couple minutes to go, but I do want to ask you about this. Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience, I think one of the best documented abduction cases I've ever seen.
Oh, no question. And the important thing about the book is that the co-author, who honestly did most of the work, was Kathleen Martin, who's Betty's niece.
Ah.
And she's got all her files, all those tapes. She's transcribed things. She was the executrix of Betty's estate. She heard about the sighting the day after it happened because her mother was Betty's younger sister who got called by Betty the next day. So she's been close to this right from the start. And we got a lot of stuff in there that's never been published before. We also have the star map work that tells us where those beings came from. And I take on the nasty, noisy negativist, as is my wont, as you know. And so
it's your role.
That's my role.
As the senior member.
I'm going to be a great grandfather soon. You don't need to rub it in, George.
But you do. You do a great job, and this is a great case. And I want to have you back on Coast to Coast at a later time to give you the justice with this story.
Thank you. It's an exciting story.
Jesse, as you've been walking around Roswell, where you were here many years ago, what's it like for you? Has it changed much?
Well, I would not recognize Roswell compared to what it was 60 years ago. Yeah, when I was here 60 years ago, the New Mexico Military Institute was outside of town. Now, most of the town is on the side of that.
They've got a Home Depot here now.
I know. Roswell is growing up.
Sam's.
It's on the map now.
Gas stations. And I think fast food places.
Yeah, I think the Roswell event put Roswell on the map.
Tom and I flew into Albuquerque, and then they had a driver pick us up there because we didn't want to fly in a little tiny Cessna. We didn't want to crash coming to a crash conference. And so we rode in and saw this incredible storm coming through. But the one thing I noticed was the vast lands out here. And we're trying to picture a crashed saucer. And there were two of them, of course, one in Roswell, one near Corona, as you stated many, many times, Stan. But just, it was so void out there. And I was trying to picture a saucer down out there. Yeah. Man, it's way out.
Well, there's a lot of open spaces, like Big Sky Country, like Montana. Montana has the name of Big Sky Country, but I think New Mexico should be in there also.
Yeah, it's a wonderful state, too. Yeah. Both of you, thank you for coming by, and enjoy the rest of the conference. I know a lot of people came here to see you, too, and you do what you do, and you do it very well. Thank you, George.
Thanks, George, very much.
Is my website on, and our website's on your...
I'm sure it is, and if it's not, it will be.
Okay. www.stantonfriedman.com, and Marcel
is...
JR.com.
You got it. Very good. Thanks. I'm George Norrie. We're live at the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash. It's their UFO festival, and I shall be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Yep, and we are live at the Roswell UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico. We're having a great time. Thousands of people out here coming and going. Just an absolute delight. And with us now, co-hosting the rest of the program, Richard C. Hoagland, in from Albuquerque. Hey, Richard, how are you?
In person, with Robin over there.
And are you wearing a bola?
Yes, of course
you are.
It's New Mexico. Come on, where's your bola, George?
I am not going to wear a bola. Good to have you.
Did you know
it's
been declared by Richardson the official tie of the state?
I didn't know that.
You are illegal because you're not wearing a bola tonight?
Okay, well, we'll get one of the fine Roswell officers to rush out and break into a store and get me one of these things. But Richard will be with us throughout the entire night. We've got a number of guests coming in. Some of them I think you'll find as an absolute surprise. But right now we're also doing some behind the secret doors. And popping in right now is a fellow I have met at several conferences and has been a regular contributor here at Coast to Coast. His name is Richard C. Hoagland.
It is Dr. Louis Torrey.
Absolutely. Hey, Louis, how are you?
Doing good. Thank you very much.
Went to a restaurant tonight with Tommy, and all of a sudden I look in the corner, and there's this guy sitting there munching down on health food, and it's Dr. Torrey.
Well, doesn't he look healthy?
He comes up to our driver and immediately begins to tell him his entire life in like 3 minutes. Ah. Absolutely amazing. How do you do that, Louis?
Well, it's a gift, you know, since my UFO contact. To me, there is no guessing. There is no magic. It's real. Dealing with UFOs since I'm 6 years old and being downloaded the universal codes in my trips inside the flying saucers allows me to do that.
You and Tom must have the same tailor.
Now that's true.
What did you say that for?
No, I think Lewis's tailor's a little more upscale than Tom's. So this is what we go through when we do live remotes all the time in Richard C. Hoagland's neck of the woods. What'd you think, by the way, of that $19 million toilet?
Well, it should have been 19.5.
Can you believe that?
Well, you know, George, there is an old expression. When you gotta go, you got to go.
Yeah. I love it.
Man, when you got to pay, you got to pay.
Is this tax dollars? American tax dollars? Sure. Oh, my gosh. I would do a better.
Well, this is the crowd that brought you the $600 hammers. Remember those?
Uh-huh.
No,
well,
I mean,
it happens. I bet it happens in your old neck of the woods, France.
Yeah, well, indeed.
Actually, not to put, you know, too light of this, doing something like that, which is so necessary in zero gravity, is not trivial. I mean, they have spent literally hundreds of millions of dollars on zero gravity personal hygiene.
Right.
And I used to know Bonnie Dunbar was an astronaut back when I was with CNN. Mm-hmm. And I talked with her and Kevin Sanders about the problems of doing what we all have to do in zero gravity. It's a huge problem. And the fact that the Russians have cracked it for 19 million tells you something about their practical approach to space technology versus our approach.
I don't know. Maybe I'm cheap, Richard, but it sounds like a lot of money. Anyways, a couple more minutes to go here with you.
Not
Lewis,
if you were up there and you were...
Well, that's true, too. Lewis, notoriety, because he makes incredible predictions, 9/11, the tsunami, the Iraq War, and you come on the program, and a lot of the things you've talked about the weather lately have come true as well.
Indeed, indeed. And I'd like to give another date, if I may.
Yes, you may.
July the 30th. I want you to make a little note for some serious surprise. And that could be anything from explosion to a bad earthquake. I ain't going to say anything else. I'm just giving one date, July the 30th.
All right, Lewis, my friend.
Check it out when time comes.
What's your website?
DrTurri.com.
Doctor with a D-R. Right?
Yeah, D-R. TURI.com. And I give my book for free as always, and my newsletter is available for people who wants to learn gather cosmic consciousness, read my prediction. It's all on the website.
All right, go ahead, Richard.
By the way, you know, Dr. Turi was 100% right about the last shuttle station mission.
Yes, he was.
Remember, he said there was a major set of problems.
And there was.
And all six computers crashed in the Russian section.
Yeah.
And it looked like, you know, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Could have been a disaster. Thanks, Louis. Enjoy the rest of the festival. Richard C. Hoagland and I will be right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, live at Roswell, New Mexico, with our sidekick, color commentator, Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com.
You know, I haven't done this in a while.
It has been a long time.
This is kind of cool.
Want me to do my Cronkite impression?
Absolutely.
Hello, Richard. Good evening. This is Walter Cronkite.
Hi.
Go get me a cup of coffee.
He didn't ask that.
No, he didn't.
He asked me to actually calculate.
But you were young then.
He asked me where to place his boat during a total solar eclipse.
All right. Well, that's a wise question.
And he made it.
All right. Introduce our next guest, Richard.
On my left, for everyone in the radio audience, Brian Temmer is the founder and president of Alien Apex Resort. In 2005, as a longtime roller coaster enthusiast and science fiction buff, Brian combined the information he obtained from his research, his unique and creative ideas, his interest in alien phenomena, and his desire to entertain and provide happiness to others into a vision of the opening of the Alien Apex Resort theme park right here in Roswell, New Mexico. Brian apparently has received some extremely positive feedback, which I'm sure he's going to tell us about, from industry experts, as well as a strong commitment from the city of Roswell itself. Brian, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
The Alien Apex Resort theme park? What the heck is that?
Well, as everyone knows, Roswell is the apex of everything alien and UFO, so that's really how that idea of that name came to me one evening.
What's going to be there? I mean, you're going to have crashed saucers there? Aliens? What?
Well, the featured attraction is going to be an alien abduction roller coaster. You will sit down and
you're serious.
I am serious. You're going to be strapped in, and you're going to be on the most sophisticated steel roller coaster in existence. And you are going to be moving through a probably Midwestern town, moving into a house, and all of a sudden you're going to see lights coming through a window, and your roller coaster is going to accelerate to a vast speed, and you're going to find yourself moments later on board a ship, an alien craft. And you're going to have probes and other interesting objects coming at you. You will be then moving into a room where you will see the Earth hurling away from you as you move into deep space, wondering if you'll ever get back, which, of course,
this is exciting.
You do.
This sounds like the Universal theme park.
It'll be better, much better.
But with that UFO flavor, I mean, this is something.
Have you been to the Star Trek experience in Las Vegas?
I have.
Have you?
No, not yet.
It sounds like this will do that one better. Robin and I went a couple, 3 years ago, and it was cutting edge, state of the art then.
Is this virtual animation and things
like
that?
No, this is actually, you're in a physical, hydraulically moved gadget, like a roller coaster, except you move, you sway, you move, you have screen stuff coming past you. I mean, it sounds to me like that's what you have in mind.
Yeah, much, much more exciting, though, because it actually is a interactive experience. Not only are you being abducted, but the aliens will be trying to communicate with you, and based on your response, the animatronics will react differently. That's, of course, just one very exciting part of the theme park. And this is a way to celebrate, of course.
There aren't any anal probes in this.
No,
right?
Okay, no. Okay. You know, and it's funny because everybody seems to ask me that question. but no, not yet, and I don't think ever. But one of the exciting things is when I talk to theme park industry experts about this idea is the first thing they say is, I can't believe that Roswell does not have an alien theme park already.
How big is this going to be, Brian?
Well, I'd like it to be at least 150 acres as far as size.
Yeah. Absolutely huge.
It is.
You know, many years ago when I was starting my Sedonia quest, I talked with one of the major industry people south of San Francisco, whose names remain nameless, and he asked me what I would think of a Sedonia theme park. I mean, it sounds to me like, Brian, you ought to have at least a Sedonia wing on this thing.
Well, there's a possibility. One of the things I'd like to do with the park is of course, have the celebration of the Roswell incident, but also the exploration of life outside of the Earth.
How would you depict that, Brian?
Well, I think a lot about SETI, and I know that there's a lot of debate about what SETI is doing and their own beliefs about UFOs, but I certainly think that there are going to be people visiting this park that are going to be skeptics, there are going to be believers, and there's going to be people in between and just people that want to have a good time. And I think it's very important to celebrate all of those aspects of it and let people have an opportunity to explore and understand that there is definitely life outside of the Earth. The possibility that there isn't, I think, is minuscule. So I want to say for people that may not fully accept the Roswell incident that there is an opportunity to explore from a scientific aspect those types of issues as well.
Do you live out here?
No, I don't. I actually live in Florida.
Oh, well, you can.
Which is home to many theme parks there. Yeah. Do you, I mean, this is an extraordinarily interesting vision because it sounds to me like you're holistic in that you go from the hard sciences
right
through where we are now, which is we've got 256 planets we've discovered. You know, we're talking about, you know, radio signals, things like that. And then you move into the history that this town epitomizes, which is that they're here. And you're planning an integrated experience.
Absolutely. And I also foresee one day when contact will be made, and I strongly believe that it will be at this park. Because what better place for an alien to finally come and say hello to everybody than at a theme park? And the first thing they probably want to do is ride that roller coaster.
What do you think happened back here in 1947, Brian?
Well, I'm certain that something very specific happened. In fact, I had taken a ride just today out to Hangar 84, just walking around, taking a couple of pictures.
Isn't that interesting?
And the feeling that I got was overwhelming. And of course, I knew what it was, but there's something mystical about that building, and it's the kind of thing when you like feel something and you just are completely inspired and overwhelmed. And that was the feeling that I had. And I'm certain that something did take place, but I'm also an understanding person about the time, and I realized that if any of us were in that situation, we would want to protect our beings, our state of life, the government, and things like that. And we would be concerned. A couple of years after World War II ended, it's probably not the most appropriate time to let the world know that we're being visited by beings that we don't fully understand. They have technology that we don't understand, and they may be a threat that we can't stop.
You know what's amazing, Richard and Brian? Well, this is my first trip to Roswell. And, you know, I've been a news person all my life, first and foremost. Paranormal investigator, researcher, leader.
Couple Emmys.
You know, three. But I came here as a news person, not the host of Coast to Coast Today, because I wanted to watch the faces of people in Roswell to see if this was a put-on or not. I believe Stanton Friedman. I believe Jesse Marcel Jr. I believe that affidavit that Walter Hout had signed. But I wanted to see the people of Roswell. I wanted to see if they were just doing this to keep this city's tourism hot. And I got to tell you, these people here believe what happened out there. And they talk about it. And yes, this is a major event every year. And it's a tourist attraction every year. But I'm going away from this. When I go back to Los Angeles tomorrow, I am going away from this event believing now in my heart that the people who live in Roswell, New Mexico, truly believe that something crashed here out of this world in 1947.
The thing that's interesting to me, I mean, this is the second time I've been here. Robin and I came down a couple, 3 years ago. A lot of the people, a lot of the thousands of people, thousands of thousands, are not from Roswell.
No.
They have come here
from all
over the world.
All over the place. I've had people from Denver, as I was saying, Louisiana, Alabama, Florida. They're just showing up all over the place.
So if, Brian, your vision came true, and I want to get to an important point on that in a second, an awful lot of people would make the pilgrimage, and I use that term very specifically, because for them, it's a time whose time has come. I mean, this Hout memo to me is a really defining moment because finally we have the senior authority figure, the public information officer for the Air Force, saying in this extraordinary affidavit, this really did happen. This is an historic place, And I think a theme park, given that your broad vision is from science to the most speculative, where what does it mean? So my question is, how close are you to actually pulling this off?
I believe I'm very close. Recently, the state of New Mexico approved a legislative appropriation of $245,000 for the initial business planning and basic layout of the park. And we've been working for the past 2 years. I've been working directly with Zach Montgomery, the city planner. And without his help, none of this would have happened. And we're very close to bringing this to reality.
Well, and, you know, some of the big boys, Anheuser-Busch with their theme parks now, and, you know, they have Busch's Gardens.
Well, the polls that you read at the top of the show indicate there's a huge customer base of people that want to know more. And I can envision, given the fact that I envision some things from time to time, that this could become a mecca where people that wanted to know, that are not getting it through the regular media, could come and educate themselves, meet other like-minded people. I remember back when Gene was trying to get Star Trek into the franchise business and into the films, the convention started. And a lot of Star Trek people who didn't realize there were other crazies out there finally personally got in touch with each other and realized, hey, I'm not the only strange person that believes in this stuff. So this park is definitely an interesting concept. Again, how close are you to actually making it happen?
I mean, how many years away do you think, realistically?
Well, I'm
not
going to
make us wait 60 years like we're doing on this anniversary.
Well, once we've got an RFP going on right now because we've got the funds, and we're in the process of selecting a final company that's going to do the full-scale designing. It's going to be one of the top-notch companies in the world, ones that have worked with large companies like Universal, Disney, things like that. So we're very close to selecting that. It's going to be the end of this month. Once we have that, it'll probably take them a couple of months to put that plan together and make a formal presentation to the theme park industry. And I strongly believe, as I always have, even 2 years ago, that this was going to happen.
Is Richardson involved in this?
Yeah,
because he was heavily involved in the spaceport, which is just over the hill.
Right. A presentation was made to his team.
That's a heavy hitter. But you do know, though, Brian, that you are going to have to put a 60-foot statue at the entrance of Richard C. Hogan. That's why he wants to know how soon it's going to die.
Well, what I'd like to
with
do...
With Ebola.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Official tie of the state.
Five years is what I would expect before you can walk through the gates. And the reason I choose
2012?
Is 2012.
Oh, come on.
No, that's exactly why, because that is
there are no coincidences.
That is the year that the end of the world is predicted on the Mayan calendar. But I believe what it is a beginning of a new age of discovery and entertainment. And I really believe this theme park, besides being a place to have a great time, it's going to be a place to prepare everyone, because one day it's going to happen where everyone simultaneously is going to meet up with beings that are not part of this earth. It's one of those things that's written already.
Why don't you build a landing pod spot? You know, like they did in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Was it Kentucky? There was a city council that actually
appropriated money. Yeah, I don't know where it was. They were going to build a landing pad for a UFO.
And wouldn't it be ironic that a theme park that opens up 65 years after the Roswell incident is the place that eventually first contact is made?
You're really planning on 2012?
I am.
That is kind of cool.
But you know what? They may come back and say, where are our three inhabitants from 1947?
Yes. No, I think what's going to happen is they're going to arrive and they're going to say, I can't believe you're charging me for parking.
Or they'll say, take us to your leader and see the 60-foot statue of Richard C. Hoagland.
Yes, that can happen.
You know, George, as you know, I have a political bent on these things. In fact, that's one of the reasons I wanted to come this year, because it's the 60th tetrahedral anniversary. And those numbers are important in terms of government operations, and we spent a lot of airtime on Coast talking about that. I have another interesting question.
And we've got 35 seconds to get it in.
Okay. And if I could remember it, I would.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Hey, Brian Temper, good luck in this project.
Yes, Brian.
Thanks for the hospitality here in Roswell.
Oh, no, thanks, George. I appreciate it.
Now, we've got a little surprise for you coming up, which I'll tell you about right now in just a moment. Chase Masterson. Yep, she was with Star Trek. You mentioned Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and Dean Haglund. from X-Files. They're joining us.
I was hoping you'd let me sit in on this one.
Of course, and I'll tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to open up the phone lines because I want to get you involved. We'll open up the phone lines for the next half hour right here, and you can talk with Chase Masterson and Dean Haglin yourself right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie along with Richard C. Hoagland, wearing bola and all, on Coast to Coast AM.